Welcome to the Versus History Podcast with your hosts, Patrick O'Shaughnessy, Connell Smith and Elliot Watson.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to this episode of the Versus History Podcast. It's me, your host, Patrick O'Shaughnessy, at History Chappie on social media. And we are absolutely delighted to welcome to the Versus History Podcast this week, Owen Dwyer, who is the author of a brand new book entitled The Garfield Conspiracy. Owen, welcome to Versus History. We're delighted to have you on board with us today.
Thank you for having me.
The pleasure really, really is all ours. Now, what I often like to do is sort of give a short blurb about the author. So I'll keep it short and pithy because there's quite a bit there. But you're a prize-winning short story writer who has won the Hennessy Emerging Fiction Prize, the Silver Quill twice, and the Smiling Politely, very, very short story competition, and the South Tipperary County Council Short Story Competition, and the Biscuit Fiction Prize. I'm going to stop there because it's ultimately better if you comes from you. So tell us a little bit about yourself before we get kicked off, Owen.
Okay, well, look, I live in Dublin. I'm from Dublin, and I'm really a businessman. I've been running my own business since 1993, and I've been writing in my spare time up to this point. But I'm 56 years of age now, and I'm going to retire early next year so that I can dedicate myself to writing more.
Lucky man.
Yeah, well, I'm looking forward to that. And look, I'm married for the last 23 years. I have five kids, and that's basically an outline of who I am and where I'm from.
Fantastic. For our Irish listeners and those that know, which part of Dublin are you from, sir?
I'm originally from Walkinstown, which is a suburb in southwest Dublin.
Fantastic. Well, here's a question to help us get to know you, Owen, still further before we start discussing your epic new book, The Garfield Conspiracy. Here's a little scenario for you. If you were sent away to a desert island, I mean, of your choice, it could be Bermuda, Turks and the Caicos, Hawaii, wherever you want it to be, for 5 years, and you can take the following: one musical album, one drink, and one book with you for company. What would they be? So one album, one drink, or one book. What would you take with you and why?
Okay, this is a really hard question, actually. I don't know why you're calling this an easy question. I think the tea is the easy part. I would take tea as my drink. You'd like to think you might take beer or wine, but if that was all you were drinking for 5 years, you'd be in quite a state. The album I would pick would be Young Americans by David Bowie. There's so many great albums out there, but I just always really liked this album. Even as a young man, it was one of my favourite albums. And there's a lot to it, so I really enjoy it. It's a little bit different to David Bowie's normal style. It's quite a bit of a disco album, really, but I just really like it, and that's what I would take for my album. And for the book, again, so many great books, but I was thinking if I'm going to be there for 5 years, Ulysses by James Joyce is a book that it would probably take you 5 years to read. If you were going to be there for an eternity, you might take Finnegan's Wake or, you know, for 50 years or something. But Ulysses is something I think that if you're on your own on an island with it, you could really study and possibly appreciate. So they're Young Americans, Ulysses and tea.
Fantastic. I don't know how tea and David Bowie album would work together, but I hear your choices. Thank you very, very much for playing along with that, Owen. Okay, then. Moving on then, set the scene for us, please. What is your new book, The Garfield Conspiracy, all about?
Okay, well, look, your listeners are primarily interested in history, Patrick, and from the historical point of view, this book is about the assassination of President James Garfield in 1881 in Washington, D.C. And it's a kind of a murder mystery about who was behind the assassination. We do know that the assassin was what they call a deranged office seeker called Charles Guiteau. But it's possible that there was somebody, as there always is with assassins, that there was somebody else behind the shooter, if you like, or the person that pulled the trigger. Now, there's a twin plot running side by side with that, because we jump from the assassination into modern day Ireland, where we meet the main protagonist of the book, who is Richard Todd. And he's a successful writer, and he's suffering from writer's block in middle age. And his publisher sends a young assistant out to help him with his book because he's behind on his deadlines. And he begins to have an affair with her. And as a result of this affair, he begins to have a guilt-induced nervous breakdown. And as part of that nervous breakdown, as he is researching the book that he is writing on Garfield's assassination, he begins to imagine or be visited by the characters who are involved in the assassination. And they begin to have conversations not only about the murder of the president, but also about Richard's personal circumstances. And they're not afraid to take him to task for his behavior. So he's been kind of held to account by the people that he's researching, which is kind of funny. But ultimately, the book is quite accurate from a historical point of view. It's quite well researched. And I would describe it as a mixture between history and fiction rather than historical fiction.
Thank you very much, Owen. One of the questions I always enjoy asking historians, but especially historical novelists, so how did you go about researching this book? And why is this story and history so important to people listening? But why is it so important to you as well? So quite complex. How did you research it? Why is this story and this history so important generally? But then why is it so important to you to tell this story?
Okay, well, there's. Can I start with the why it's important part first, if I may?
Okay.
The assassination of James Garfield happened during what's known as the period between the end of the Civil War and the beginning of the 20th century. And it's an often forgotten time because on one side of it, you have the Civil War, and the other side of it, you have the 20th century and the First World War and all that drama. But during this period, this was when America's democracy was really bedded down. And it was also when they became an industrial superpower. They became a military superpower, as we all know, after the Second World War, as you will know, Patrick. But they became an industrial superpower. And the most dramatic incident in that period is the assassination of James Garfield, in my opinion. And it's something that not a lot of people outside of academic circles know about, but it had a huge impact on American history and on America today. And I think that's why, in a general sense, this book, the historical aspect of this book is important. For me personally, the reason why the book is important is because it deals with mental illness, which for me is an interesting and important subject. Obviously, the assassin is mentally ill. And he's somebody who's very much neglected by the society that he comes from. And as a result of that, there are consequences, dreadful consequences. And I thought that was important. And also the writer, the protagonist, Richard Todd, who's writing the book within the book, he is suffering from a midlife crisis as well, which is another one of these mental illnesses that's not really spoken about or even thought about by a lot of people. And I found that interesting to explore.
Probably hasn't escaped your notice. President Garfield probably isn't the best known of the 46 US presidents that there have been since George Washington in 1789, I think. What did you find out about him whilst researching? Because I'm guessing as much as our audience love history, as much as I love history, he is probably one of the presidents that we know least about.
Well, that's understandable. I really liked what I found out about Garfield for a number of reasons. One is that he was what they call a log cabin president. He was born into very poor circumstances in Ohio, what would have been, you know, the west of America at the time. His father died when he was still very young, and he was raised by his mother. He taught himself how to speak Greek and Latin. He got a scholarship to university on the strength of his own academic ability. And he enlisted during the Civil War and worked his way up to the rank of general and saw some terrible things in the war. He fought in Kentucky and was very much involved on the front line of the Civil War. He then became a congressman, and for those times, a very liberal congressman. He's very much against slavery and very much a supporter of Abraham Lincoln. And in that in that mindset. So a very modern man for his time. He didn't want to be president. He had no ambitions to be president, and only became president because the Republican convention, where they nominate their candidate for the presidency, was deadlocked in 1880. And there were two different factions between in the Republican Party at the time. Neither would give ground, and he was chosen as a compromise candidate. So he didn't. He was one of the few presidents who didn't actually want the job. Harry Truman, interestingly, was another one, another great president, in my view. So there's all sorts of things I admire about Garfield, but it's the things we don't know about him that I find interesting. What kind of a president, for example, would he have been had he survived? He had great plans, and I think he would have done a lot for America had he survived. And I think it's kind of a tragedy that he didn't. An untold story. We'll just never know what he could have done, if you know what I mean.
Absolutely fascinating. I just can't help myself but to curveball you here, which is very, very mean, but I'm sure you'll be able to deal with it. You said he was quite an accomplished sort of self-taught academic. Was he bookish?
He was very bookish. From what I can gather, he was a very straight guy. Like, he was involved in what was known as the teapot scandal at the time, but he was very much involved on the periphery. He was a rarity in one sense, and a very straight politician and very moral politician. But he was very academic, and, you know, very interested in all sorts of academic subjects. As I mentioned earlier, teaching yourself ancient Greek and Latin is no small feat. So he must have been a very intelligent man.
And the final curveball question I will give you, obviously, the late 1800s is a time of unprecedented immigration to the Americas and its new immigration. So what was his position on immigration?
I know that his Secretary of State, James Blaine, who you may have heard of, is somebody who went for the presidency three times and failed three times, obviously. He was interesting on the subject of emigration, because he saw democracy really as being for, the white Anglo-Saxon Americans, even though he was on the Republican side during the Civil War, and he was a Republican congressman. For example, he wrote quite derogatory things about Chinese people, and he was in favor of appeasing the South after the Civil War. And by appeasing the South, obviously, he meant the white people in the South rather than helping the black people, which, Garfield, I haven't come across any evidence one way or the other regarding Garfield's position on emigration. But if his close friend James Blaine is anything to go by, I would imagine that he'd probably be very conservative from our point of view anyway.
The book contains some very colourful and very, very interesting characters. For instance, Garfield became the object of a complex conspiracy. Please tell us more about the main protagonists and their interweaving relationships in your book.
Okay, so look, the reason why I came to this subject in the first place was because of a senator called Roscoe Conkling. I don't know if you've ever heard of him, but I was kind of messing around looking at a bit of American history on Wikipedia, and I came across this name, Roscoe Conkling. And I have to say, I was kind of smiling looking at the name because it was so unusual. And I was saying to myself, who in the name of God would have a name like Roscoe Conkling? So it turned out that Roscoe Conkling was the most influential senator in the Reconstruction period in America. He's a very influential guy, and he was an arch enemy of James Blaine, who we've mentioned earlier, Garfield's Secretary of State. And they hated each other. It wasn't like they were political adversaries or, they absolutely despised each other. And Conkling, I think, is a very interesting character because he's 6'3". He has flaming red hair and a kiss curl in the middle of his forehead that would put Elvis to shame. Okay. He's a womanizer. He's very arrogant. He's a pugilist. He's a trained boxer, and he's not afraid to get into a row. He's had affairs with every second woman in Washington, D.C. But unlike, say, I suppose, James Blaine and James Garfield, who are on the surface more pious characters, in his heart, Roscoe Conkling is far more in favour of supporting Black people in the South. Even though he's very conservative in other ways, he doesn't want reform of the civil service, which Garfield and James Blaine want. He's very much, you know, a Republican dogmatist, but his heart is in the right place when it comes to real civil liberties for the Blacks in the South. And that's what I find. I find him very interesting, seeing, as you mentioned, interesting characters, because he's a real contradiction. What you see is definitely not what you get with Roscoe Conkling. But he has an awful lot of influence on those around him because he's a bully. And Chester Arthur, who succeeds, who was Garfield's vice president and ultimately the president when Garfield was assassinated, he's basically Roscoe Conkling's lackey. He's his runner. He's the guy that does his dirty work for him. And Conkling thinks he's home and dry when Chester Arthur becomes president. But Arthur turns on him and he carries on with Garfield's agenda. And it's the reaction to that is explored by Conkling, is explored in the book. And that's the type of conflict I think that you're referring to, Patrick, which I found very interesting. These big personalities, when they collided with each other, how they responded to each other and the consequences for American society as a result.
Again, I'm absolutely fascinating. And from what I've read in the book, that's really, really played out there. So the next question, I know that you've researched the lifelong feud, and I think you've touched on this already, between the two, quote, Leviathans of the Republican Party in the 19th century, Roscoe Conkling and James G. Blaine. What did you learn there?
Okay, well, they're two very talented and intelligent and charismatic politicians who, either on their own, if the other one had left the other one alone, if you know what I mean, I think they could have achieved so much. But they cancelled each other out by dedicating so much energy to their feud. And an example, the biggest example for me is something we've touched on already, is there was a Civil Rights Act put forward in the Restoration period, which would really have consolidated freedom for Blacks in America, freedom to travel, freedoms to vote, because even though they were supposed to be allowed to vote, they were being blocked. And they were being interfered with, they were being threatened and lynched. And we all know the gruesome and horrible things that happened to the Black population in South America, which went on until the 1960s and beyond, as we all know. But I think that if they didn't have such a personalized feud between the two of them, the Civil Rights Act might just have gone through, and it might have progressed the cause of proper democracy in America. Because in my opinion, we didn't have democracy in America until the second Civil Rights Act, or I think it was the third Civil Rights Act, was passed in the 1960s. Because you can't really call a country a democracy when there's such a large part of its population that are not being given the same freedom. Whether that's women or whether that's immigrants, as you've mentioned earlier on, or whether that's Black people. And I think America would have been a much better country if these two really talented people hadn't, you know, for whatever reason, dedicated so much energy into destroying each other.
Okay, another scenario for you. I'm a commuter and I'm pulling into either Clapham Junction, Waterloo Station, Berlin Station, Penn Station in New York, and I chance across a bookstore and I see your book. Why should I buy it? Again, a devilishly simple question, but why? Why should I buy your book?
Okay, well, the first thing is you will get a good story. I think it's a really good story. The assassination of James Garfield is a really good story, and the background to it is very interesting. So I think if you're at all interested in history, you'll be interested in it. But there's also a murder mystery, a whodunit in there. And if that's something that you're interested in, I think that you'll enjoy the book as well. But at the risk of making it sound like the book is absolutely crammed with everything, there's also the plot that happens in the modern day about the, you know, the writer falling in love with the younger woman and, you know, the carnage of that particular train wreck and how that integrates with the Garfield story. And I think that there's a very good twist at the end of the book, which obviously I'm not going to tell you about. But it's we only reach the final denouement, if you like, towards the end of the book. So what readers will enjoy is trying to answer these questions themselves as they go along, while at the same time learning a little bit about American history and maybe getting some insights into, human flaws like, midlife crises or mental illness, or, the older guy, the cliche of the older guy falling for the younger woman and all that entails. So I think it's about real life and things that happen to real people, but in the context of a very dramatic historical incident that's very real and has had a big influence on American society, probably on world society, because America has such an influence on the rest of the world to a point.
Never a truer word spoken or a more understated statement made. Yeah, thank you very much for that, Owen. Okay, I've got to ask you this question because I know there'll be listeners tweeting me in if I don't ask it. Garfield was obviously assassinated, but is there any symmetry with other presidents or leading figures in US society that have been assassinated, such as Abraham Lincoln, JFK, Malcolm X, Martin Luther King? Obviously, that spans a really broad chronological plinth, but is there anything that we can link to, any correlation with any other assassinations?
Well, you know as well as I do that every, prominent assassination has a conspiracy theory behind it. So from that point of view, there would be a lot in common, particularly with the Kennedy assassination, in my view, that is also one of these that's supposed to have been carried out by a lone gunman. I think everybody kind of recognizes that Abraham Lincoln was killed by agents for the Confederate Army. I think that's more or less established in history now. But I think the assassination of Martin Luther King, it's probably more black and white, isn't it? I mean, it's the reason why he was assassinated, I think, is clearer than the reasons why Kennedy was assassinated or the reason why Garfield was assassinated. The reasons why Lincoln was assassinated are quite clear as well, aren't they? I mean, it was the end of the Civil War, and there isn't really a huge debate about why he was assassinated. But there is a big debate about why Kennedy was assassinated and why Garfield was assassinated. So I think they're the two, I think, that have the most in common of the ones you've mentioned.
And so let's say there's someone out there, they really like the book, they want to get in touch with you, they want to correspond, they want to ask questions. Is there any way they can do that? Are you on any social media platforms?
I am. I'm on Facebook. I've just gone on to Twitter and still trying to figure out what it is. I'm of that generation where I'm trying to catch up with a lot of social media, but I'm on Facebook and I'd be delighted to hear from anybody if they have any questions or any comments to make, especially people that have positive comments to make.
Absolutely. So let's conclude by saying the book is called The Garfield Conspiracies and it's published by Liberty's Press. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Well, and what formats can we get hold of this in? I know it's paperback, so I've had a copy to pre-read and it's fantastic. Is it in any other formats?
Yes, it'll be on Kindle. And it's obviously available through Amazon as well. So we haven't got it on Kindle yet, but we will be putting it on Kindle. But you can buy it through Amazon, I suppose, is the easiest way, or you can buy it in a bookshop when it's launched in October this year.
Fantastic. And just to buttress what Owen has said, I mean, the Irish Independent have a quote here verbatim. Irish fiction, as we've rarely seen it, consistently smart, thought-provoking and well-written. Well, that's great praise from the Irish Independent. And from the Sunday Independent, it's visceral in its violence and compelling in its writing style. It is fascinating. So there you have it, folks. You have it from Owen. You have it from the Irish Independent and the Sunday Independent and from Versus History. It's a fantastic book. I think we're running a competition at the minute where we're giving away a pre-release copy of The Garfield Conspiracy, along with some other fantastic books from authors that we've interviewed for Versus History. So, folks, please get hold of this book. It is engaging, gripping from start to finish. You will not regret parting with your pennies, dimes, dinars or dirhams. So please get hold of it. It's fantastic. Owen, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on Versus History. You must come back and visit us soon.
Anytime. It was my pleasure, Patrick. Lovely to talk to you.
You too. All the best. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Versus History Podcast. visit us at www.versushistory.com and follow us at Versus History on Twitter and Instagram. You can download all episodes from iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, or from wherever you get your podcasts.